I'll go into a little bit on the history of the fraternity. Let's go back to 1920. At that time, particularly in the Missouri Synod, the church became aware of the need to provide campus ministers for students on the campus. There was an explosion of student population on the campus, and you have to also remember that during that time in the history of higher education, there were no dormitories. So a lot of students went to college and lived in boarding houses and lived away from home. And a pastor by the name of Gustav Stiegemeyer at the University of Illinois was assigned the job and the responsibility of helping to maintain the heritage of Lutheran students at U of I. And so he started looking for ways that he could get the group formed into activities. And you also have to look back to the years 1920, when a lot of these students were sons of immigrants. And because of that, mom and dad didn't speak English very well. A lot of them spoke German. A lot of them came over after the war. A lot of them came from the Soviet Union or from Russia after the Bolshevik Revolution in 17. A lot of these people came to the United States, worked hard to send their sons to college, probably financially strapped at the time, but placed a value on education. And at that time, Reverend Stiegemeyer, a good German, went out and said, how can I get these people active and working together and preserve the heritage and traditions of the church and of their families? And so he started the traditional things that you would do in campus ministry, the bonfires, the sing-alongs, the Bible studies. And what happened was then in the fall of 1919, a group of students said, this is a lot of fun. Why don't we pool our resources and live together? And so they proceeded to go and they rented the second and third floor of a boarding house in Champaign, Illinois, and founded what was called the Lutheran Alumni League at U of I. Things went great for the group. They had people knocking on the door saying, you know, we want to join the group. And so in the fall of 1921, they reorganized the group and became a Concordia Club. And the name they adopted was a Concordia Club. And we're an organization of Lutheran students on campus who live together, who work together, who have our meals together, and we want to create a home-like environment for men of the same faith. Well, at that time, also in the history of higher education, the fraternity movement was very big on campus. And the Concordia Club participated in activities. They played intramurals. They ate together in the dining hall. They went to class together. And pretty soon a lot of people started calling them Concordia Fraternity. Now, they weren't really a fraternity, but they did have a constitution. They did have a ritual. They did design a crest. They had emblems symbolic of the group. And so there was a small group of people within the group that said, well, let's reorganize again and become a fraternity. A lot of people opposed that because to become a fraternity, they would run the risk of becoming increasingly secularized, and pretty soon they would lose the real reason that they were together, and that was to share their faith. The argument against that, posed so eloquently by our founders, was that by joining the fraternity system, we could have a positive influence on both fraternities and on the university, because we would have a voice in university government. We could be an example for other groups to follow by basing our system, our fraternity, on a religious heritage. And by the fall of 1925, that became a reality, and incorporation papers were chartered, and Alpha Chapter at the University of Illinois was formed. 2 months later, they drove to Purdue University and formed another chapter there, And several years after that, chapters at Michigan and the University of Nebraska followed. And that was basically our founding within the first 5 years. Now, since that time, things have changed for Beta Sigma Psi. In the 1920s, in the 1930s, and in the 1940s, Beta Sigma Psi was primarily and exclusively a Missouri Synod organization. The reason being, Missouri Synod were the only people on the scene as campus ministers. They were the forerunners of campus ministry, and they assigned specific pastors to minister to the needs of college students. And so, many times, students would come to the university who were not Missouri Synod and yet participated actively and, in fact, joined the Missouri Synod Church. In the 50s, that all changed, and LCM came on the scene, the mergers of various synods to create the American Lutheran Church and the Lutheran Church in America occurred in the 50s and 60s. And so Beta Sigma Psi's constitution underwent a few changes. We currently require a member to be a communicant Lutheran. That word has always given us trouble every year at convention. What is the word communicant? And then we get into the big synodical battle. Right now, we stress that our heritage is of the Lutheran faith. We celebrate the Lutheran tradition, and we provide a home for Lutheran college men. We currently have 13 chapters consisting of approximately 550 undergraduates, and I try to maintain contact and communications with approximately 6,000 alumni. Right now, during the months of February and March, we are doing a survey as to the church-related experience of our alumni. We just celebrated our 60th anniversary, and we want to see, are we in fact doing what we set out to do? Now, whenever you work with group living, whenever you work with any group, whenever you join an organization, the goals and objectives and the intent of the organization is always greater than the goals and the objectives and the intent of each individual member. And the standards of the organization are always higher than the standards of each individual member. And that is just part of organizational government. And so, Beta Sigma Psi fraternity has extremely high standards. And a criticism that may come back to Beta Sigma Psi fraternity is with collegiate undergraduates is you're not living up to your standards. You're a group of Lutheran Christian gentlemen, and how can XYZ go on in your fraternity house? How can you have a party that made the front pages of the local newspapers? That's a very human reaction. The other thing, part of the educational process of the fraternity and of group living, is we're dealing with kids. We're dealing with 18 and 19-year-olds who were born next fall. Our members will have been born the summer of 1969. They never saw anybody walk on the moon. They never experienced Woodstock. Their parents drove a Volkswagen. It's a different culture, and we're dealing with youth. And they make mistakes. And our attitude is, we want them to be in the fraternity. We want them to be in a Lutheran environment when they make those mistakes, because it's easier when you're in that environment to work it out. The other thing is that these kids have an enormous amount of pressure put on them in the management, in the day-to-day management of a fraternity house. The chapter that I came from, the chapter that Mike came from, is the same one, currently has an annual operating budget of roughly $172,000 that these kids are responsible for. They're hiring employees. They hire a cook. They hire a house mother. They're serving meals. They're running a business, and it's a big business. It's not something trivial that is just like an organization. They get involved, and they get their feet wet. And part of that is our intent and our training. Now, we work in conjunction with the campus pastor. Now, the campus pastor, whoever, quote, quote, is officially in that title at the institution where we're at. At some institutions, it's a Missouri Synod pastor. At some institutions, it's an NLCM pastor. At some institutions, they're separate and distinct. At some institutions, they're in the same building with offices right next door to each other. And it varies from campus to campus as to our relationship with the church. And by the church, I mean the Lutheran church, the campus church, whether it be a campus chapel devoted entirely to student ministry, or whether it's a town gown ministry that has that is a congregation with members from the community belonging. As a member of the clergy, why should, a question I get asked by members of the clergy is, why should I be interested in Beta Sigma Psi? My answer to that is primarily because one of the biggest fears that a pastor has is that as soon as a student graduates from high school, a Lutheran student, as soon as he graduates from high school, the pastor knows he probably, in most cases, is not going to see that person again until he gets married. That transition time from 18-year-old high school senior, where mom is not making me go to church, and 22, 23, 24-year-old, where I do want to get married and I realize the value of family and the implication of my heritage and my upbringing. There are a lot of Lutheran students who drift. One of my very outspoken criticisms of the synod is, of all synods, is that inaccessibility to the young age group, the 18 to 30 students, who are primarily left out, not intentionally, but who primarily are not encouraged to participate in church activities or made to feel second-class citizens within the church. A very interesting study was done, I think, in last February or March in the District Bulletin of Youth Ministries, was a ranking done by the congregations of where they ranked ministries. Now, back in the 20s and 30s, campus ministry ranked very, very high within the synod, and they went and they built buildings and built magnificent churches all over the United States on various campuses. Now, in the top 10, I think campus ministry ranks about number 8, right above, maybe 2 percentage points above prison ministry and some other ministries. And so obviously the influence of today's congregation has said, well, they're adults now, they can handle it on their own. My argument is they can't. Now, Beta Sigma Psi tries to encourage that participation. We are actively involved in the campus ministries, whether it be LSM, the NLCM Chapel, the Missouri Synod Church on campus, Missouri Synod programming on campus. We try and encourage our members to attend, to go. We also have a little peer pressure in that we can make our members go to church. Well, we try to. There's things such as cold showers and everything else. And I'm sure Mike can tell you some stories. But we encourage them through participation. I know that I got involved in my campus church. I became a member of the board of my campus church. I contribute regularly now to my campus church only because when I was a freshman, somebody made me go. Somebody took the place of my parents and got me up in the morning and made me go. Now, there's a lot of differences between the Catholic Church and a Protestant church or a Lutheran church. And many times the Catholic Church preys on guilt. And so young people are trained to go to church because God makes me go to church. In the Lutheran Church, we don't do that. We believe in a in God's grace and forgiveness and a loving Father rather than a mean, nasty old man. So we don't encourage our children to go to church because God makes me go to church. Our children go to church because Mom makes me go to church. And so when you have a young Catholic student, 18 years old, getting away from home, and boy, the first month away from home, you try everything, don't you? When you have a Catholic student do that, he feels obligated to go to worship. He feels obligated to go to confession. He feels obligated to go to church. The Lutheran student doesn't feel that. He's experimenting. The Lutheran student is saying, what is my religion? What is my, what is the meaning of my religion? Yes, I went through confirmation. Yes, I might have even gone to parochial high school. But still, he's 18 or 19 year old before he really questions religion in his life. And that's where we can help. The issues that confront our members are exactly the same as the issues that confront every member who goes to a secular campus. He's going to be exposed to drugs. He's going to be exposed to alcohol. He's going to be exposed to immoral activity, however you define the word moral. He's going to be exposed to things that his family would not approve of. And in an environment where everybody is of the same faith, the opportunity exists for discussion. And the opportunity exists for, well, I can tell you what I would do in this situation, or I don't approve of that. And it appears to be a much, much more open setting. We develop, we want to develop socially acceptable, well-adjusted, mature Lutheran gentlemen, Christian gentlemen. That's a quote out of one of our creeds. And that is what our programming attempts to do. We organize programming around three basic principles that we call the three S's: social, spiritual, and scholastic. And because of those, we hope to create good alumni who participate actively back into the chapter and back into the national organization and can perpetuate the chapter and also expand to new campuses. Now, before I go on a little more about Beta Sigma Psi, let's talk about what a fraternity is. A fraternity is simply group living. It's the same as a co-op. It's the same as, it's an idea that is espoused by various organizations. A fraternity is primarily centered around a mentor. Beta Sigma Psi's mentor happens to be Martin Luther. Sigma Chi is founded on the Jordan Standard. Lambda Chi Alpha is a fraternity that's founded on the necessity of chivalry, and they have some knight in the 8th century or whatever that they espouse the ideals of. Kappa Alpha Order honors Robert E. Lee. So basically, we're functioning in the same mode that most fraternities do. Now, at the time of our formation, fraternities, let's make that secret organizations, were not approved by the church, by any synod of the church. Basically, because a lot of organizations espouse an allegiance to that organization, or a creed, or something that does not place God at the epicenter of their life. And so Beta Sigma Psi was designed, and in fact, our ritual, our traditions, our symbols, our colors were all created right here at Concordia Seminary by two students, Carl and Bruno Albrand, in 1925. And our ritual was designed so that God comes first, and then loyalty to yourself and loyalty to your fraternity brothers follow. It's a natural progression. Our ritual is not secret. It's open to any member of the Lutheran clergy. Technically, realistically, it's open to anybody who expresses a desire to witness it. It's a moving ritual that espouses a relationship between the initiate into the fraternity and into the church, the nation, the community, and the world. So, in essence, we function the same as a lot of college fraternities. We belong to the National Fraternity Conference, which is the umbrella organization that supervises national fraternities. There are 59 members. Currently, Beta Sigma Psi is the only fraternity that has a religious clause, a Lutheran clause in their constitution. We probably, if we would drop that clause, we probably would grow very, very fast. And the reason we don't drop that clause is because we believe in it. We believe in the necessity of it. Now, there are Jewish historical fraternities. There are Catholic historical fraternities. But they have used their constitutional requirements so that you do not have to be Jewish to join the organization. You do not have to be Catholic to join the organization. We ask that you do be Lutheran to join the fraternity. Some people do join the fraternity, not as Lutherans or not expressing a preference to any particular religion or any particular church, basically being an unchurched person. They then go through a period of confirmation or an adult class with the campus pastor, and they do become confirmed. At that time, we do initiate them as members of the fraternity. What's amazing about that is that those actions tend to tie the group together as a unit even more stronger. The act of seeing a member of your group take instruction in your faith, I believe it should be mandatorily required that all 21-year-olds take confirmation again, because the first time you take it, it doesn't stick. I don't know what the thing is, but it's amazing that the members of the chapter who aid and assist this gentleman in taking instruction, how much they grow spiritually and how much more they understand after reviewing the same material that they probably saw 4 or 5 years earlier. That tends to tie our chapters together very, very strong. I don't think we regard it as an outreach. We're not out to recruit members and make them Lutheran. I don't think we also intend, and we do not profess, that we are the way, we are the one true faith. We live together because we are of the same faith. We don't do that to exclude people who are not Lutheran. We do that to include people who are. And there's a big difference, and that is the basis of, for years and years and years, we've been in and out of court on the charge of discrimination. Now, to prove a charge of discrimination, you have to say that you are one of the affected class. And so, so somebody has to bring suit of the affected class. Not anybody can just, you know, charge discrimination. But we have always argued that we believe in a positive form of discrimination, and that the only reason the organization exists is to include people who are Lutheran. And people have a right to do that, constitutionally and by precedent of the court. If there are four females standing against the wall and you ask one to marry you, that does not mean that you're discriminating against the other three. There is a certain right to associate with people in business and in pleasure and in socially for like interests. And our like interests happen to be our faith. And so that handles, in most cases, the constitutional issue that is raised by some of the state schools. Now the question then comes, why don't we go to Lutheran institutions? And why do we not have a chapter of Valparaiso, at Susquehanna, at the smaller Lutheran colleges? Primarily because we have no uniqueness on those campuses, particularly those campuses that have Greek systems. If I go to Valparaiso, the chances that I am Lutheran are very, very great. And if I join Alpha Tau Omega fraternity at Valparaiso, the chances that everybody else in that fraternity are Lutheran are very, very great. And so Beta Sigma Psi fraternity has nothing to offer except competition with Alpha Tau Omega, which is not what we're about. Beta Sigma Psi fraternity primarily does well on state land-grant institutions to provide a group living experience for Lutheran students at a secular institution. I'll close and then try to answer any questions that you have. Some of the newer concern is, well, what about the women? Well, in 1978, the secretary of the Beta Sigma Psi office and the staff assistant of the Beta Sigma Psi office, who were both women, got a little weary of answering the phone calls saying, well, what do I do with my daughter? You know, you have my son, what do I do with my daughter? So in 1978, we formed an organization called Phi Beta Chi Sorority, which functions in very much the same manner. Incidentally, fraternities and sororities are allowed by law to discriminate against sex. They are exempt from the Title IX Act of 1964 by an act of Congress saying that women cannot sue to join a fraternity and men cannot sue to join a sorority, that there are reasons for group living, and living together in and of itself is a right that the organizations have. And so Phi Beta Chi Sorority started in 1978. They currently have 5 chapters, and we're doing a rapid expansion on some of the state schools. Now, Phi Beta Chi Sorority, because of the times, because of 1978, because of the lawsuits, because of the cries of discrimination, they do not have a Lutheran clause embedded into their constitution. Their constitution is designed, and the quote that they use, I believe, in their constitution is to celebrate the Lutheran heritage. They do have some members who are not Lutheran. However, Luther's Small Catechism is part of their associate member education, whereas in our case it's not. So in essence, in spiritual training and guidance, they're probably actually doing more to advance the Lutheran faith than we are. But that's one of the little technicalities of the law that we've tried to work out. So Phi Beta Chi and Beta Sigma Psi for the last several years have been almost linked together. And last year, the women's organization had grown to the point and had enough members and enough alumni contributing that they hired their own national director and moved out of our office, so that now, even though we work very closely together and have weekly meetings, we are not linked physically. And Phi Beta Chi Sorority is headquartered in Lake St. Louis, and we're headquartered in Florissant. Now, I just covered a broad overview of the history of the fraternity and why we exist. And I'm open to any questions pertaining to, you know, campus ministry, what do you see your role as being, that sort of thing.
Do we have a list of the universities here?
Right. There's a couple of lists in there on the brochure. We went through a period of similar organizations of bad management. We had people in our office who were not expending funds properly or not administrating properly. We have just started a new expansion program. And as a matter of fact, we started a group last fall at Texas A&M University, which is doing rather well.
Which
Okay, they're both on the back of the Gilderoy's and in that brochure right on top there.
Oh, okay. Now, do parish pastors have these lists there?
Yes, they do.
To make sure, okay.
Particularly the pastors in the states where we are located, which is primarily Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
We currently are located primarily Midwest. We've got expansion plans right now for new groups in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Minnesota, and the Dakotas. Basically, that's because that's where the Lutherans live. But we will be working aggressively in the next few years on expansion. We had several chapters closed in the 1970s. Actually, in the 1960s, we got caught up in the whole turmoil on campus, and you know, it's not cool to go to church, and a lot of those things. And rather than battle with our chapters, we said, here's our standards. If you can't live up to our standards, you either have to remove yourself from our organization or we will close you down. In two cases, they removed themselves from our organization, and in the rest of the cases, we did close them down. The dream is that some year we will go back to those campuses. The attitude on campus right now has changed. God is in, if you will. The religious aspect, you know, attendance at campus churches is up. Students are more interested in religion across the board, not only in the Lutheran Church, but in almost any campus ministry. And so the time is right now for us to go back and to offer what we do have to offer to aid those ministries.
How involved or how much do you encourage the local pastors to be? How much can they be involved?
The local parish pastors or the local campus pastors?
Campus and maybe parish.
Parish pastors, we ask to question us, and we ask a parish pastor to recommend to his students. If a person is intent on joining a fraternity, some students are, some students aren't, that if you are joining a fraternity, a good one to join would be Beta Sigma Psi. We ask the campus pastors to take an interest in where their students are going to college. In the turmoil of today's world and the mobility of today's world, pastors find that increasingly hard to do. Many, many pastors don't know where their students are going to college. It used to be in most parishes when a family moved out of the parish, the pastor was on the phone calling the pastor in the area where the family was moving. And there were ties kept encouraging people to stay involved in the church. Logistics don't allow a lot of pastors to do that anymore because of the mobility of today's society. And that is a very, very difficult aspect of maintaining your faith and maintaining your religion. I know when I moved to St. Louis, I found it very, very hard to find the right congregation. I found it, first of all, it was very, very hard to find a church because when I first moved here, the first week, you have to open to the yellow pages, you know, churches, Lutheran, you know, find out where the churches are located. And then you have to work with some of the, you know, attend worship and do some other things before you find a church that you feel comfortable in and wanting to participate in. Stupid me finally realized that if I would have gone talk to my pastor before I left, that search would have been so much more easier. But we don't think about those things, and particularly a college student doesn't think about those things. I think every parish pastor should encourage his members who go to school to be involved in the campus ministry. Campus ministry is functioning at such a broad level, beyond education. So many campus ministries are involved in the social aspect of the student's life, in the educational aspect of classes. In fact, I was at U of I, Champaign, Illinois, 3 weeks ago, and was reading the bulletin board, and there's something like 36 different classes offered during the week, everything from a discussion on women's rights and abortion to Bible studies on a particular chapter or a particular book. There, the range of educational activities that are taking place right now in campus ministry is phenomenal. Why deny that to your member and to a student particularly? And the only way he's going to get involved is if, well, there's two ways. One, somebody calls, or the campus pastor gets in touch with him, or two, his home pastor refers him and encourages that participation. Now, it is extremely difficult. Mike and I went to the University of Nebraska, which has two separate campus ministries. There's a Missouri Synod ministry and an NLCM ministry. Both have two staff people. So basically, there's four staff people on the University of Nebraska campus. There are 16,000 Lutheran students. There is no way that those pastors can go out and knock on doors. They have too much to do. They're overworked, you know. So a lot of it has to come from the home parish pastor to get the student into the center and then participate in the activities. So that's the first thing I ask of a parish pastor. As a campus pastor, we ask them to be involved because they realize the unique opportunities of working with a group of men. Anywhere, our chapters range anywhere from 40 to 75 men. 75 guys who live together and who are buds, these guys are willing to talk in a setting. We call them Bible studies, but I don't think we have anything that's literally a Bible study. What they should be called is discussions or bull sessions or whatever that the campus pastor participates in. And nowhere is he probably going to get the honesty and response that he's going to get from the guys at Beta 6. Because they learn through living together that group living has certain disadvantages. And one of the disadvantages is you come under criticism. And, you know, I don't like the way you shave in the morning or whatever, you know. And you have to learn to adapt and to adjust to a lot of other people. And because of that, there tends to be an honesty and an openness and an acceptance of criticism that doesn't really exist out in the campus community. And so when we're talking about a contemporary issue, whether it be I don't like the third setting, or whether it be nuclear arms or whatever, that the guys tend to be very, very open. And I hear what you're saying, but I disagree with you, and this is why. Let me tell you about it. And they talk back and forth, and the campus pastor has an incredible opportunity to mediate that. And in most cases, the campus pastor, either on a weekly basis or a biweekly basis, is over at the chapter house with an organized discussion on some pre-selected topic. The other thing is that the men adjust themselves to accepting the fallen back, if you will, so that the campus pastor knows when he has somebody come in for counseling, whether it be a drug problem or an alcohol problem, he has infinite resource at the fraternity house because they have experienced that. Undoubtedly, some member of that chapter has gone through the same experience and has had a drug problem, has had an alcohol problem, has had an attitude problem, has had a parental problem, and that they have worked it out as a group, and so that he can go back and he can say, I'm glad you came in to me. Why don't we go down to dinner at the Beta Sig House? And subtly, it will come up, and some guy will say, yeah, you know, my parents got divorced last year, and I really didn't know how to handle it either. That has been developed over the years to become a remarkable resource for the campus pastor. That's another statistic that I find alarming is of 500 and some undergraduates, we probably are approaching 20% of our members come from single-parent families. We are offering them a family that they probably never had, or a family, maybe they come to us because of the breakup of the family and they want to experience that again. We do offer In most chapters, there's what we call in-house residences, either chapter or either house mothers or house parents that live on premises, and they do everything from sew buttons to supervise menus to provide training in etiquette and social graces to impromptu counseling. We do tell them, we do train our house parents a little bit that they're really not to be involved in the counseling aspect, that they should refer immediately either to the campus pastor or to the university counseling center. That's not their role, but they kind of get caught up in the whole thing. Yeah.
My experience with fraternity exposure is very skewed coming from the University of Minnesota. Wasn't involved with one, but I guess out of the three S's, the one that was really highly emphasized was the social, and probably my theme of the other two was very little scholarly and no spiritual. And I know that this is a bit of a skewed view of the things, that they're not all like that, but I think at large secular universities that a lot of them are quite social and not real moral or growing towards the things that fraternities are really striving for. And I guess, Mike, when you were talking about secularity and how the Lutheran fraternity getting involved with the Lutheran church being involved with fraternities, bringing themselves into that secular format is a problem, but you see that as important because then they can be a witness to the secular world, but at the same time can backfire and go the reverse way, and the secular world becomes a witness to the Lutheran fraternity. And also, I'm sure that it differs too from campus to campus. If you're from the University of Nebraska, if you're from the other ones, University of Missouri, Loyola, or some other ones, that you have different levels of secularity or fraternity, I'm sure. And how does the Lutheran fraternity deal with that problem of secularity and making sure that they don't compromise their spiritual values?
Good question. First of all, two comments. Preface. The University of Minnesota has had a tough time with their Greek system. In fact, we closed our chapter there in 1978, and six other fraternities closed the next year. Right now, the university has gotten involved and said, hey, there's more to life than sitting in a lawn chair drinking beer. And so our dream is that, yes, we can go back to the University of Minnesota. And in fact,
we were there once.
Yeah, and in fact, we do own property there. We have a beautiful house that's up there. And so that is our dream. One of the things that I do with the parish pastors, and I touched on it and didn't explain it, is to question us and to say, I don't like that. Please explain the intent of this. We had one chapter who was doing a fundraising project, and they were having a I guess you'd call it a party, but they were having a pajama party, and they were raffling off a waterbed, and the campus, you bought tickets and everything else, and all the money went to charity. There was some clergy in town who had a very very big problem with that. Well, they questioned it. They said, what is your intent? And because of that fact, the chapter then sat down and developed the standards, and everything was done in good taste, and the clergy probably even attended. But the potential for that party with that name, with marketed the way it was, the potential for danger was there. But the function came off fantastic. They raised a lot of money. Everybody had a good time. It was done in good taste. I'm not sure that would have occurred had not the clergy questioned and said, please explain this. We got the literature on it. Please explain it. the second thing is we as alumni have to watch the chapter. And they're going to make mistakes. And we have to go and we have to question, we have to stay in contact with them. And I think that is one thing that we approach as far as keeping that spirituality. And then the campus pastor, every chapter is required to have a pastoral advisor who in most cases is the campus pastor. He's not required to be the campus pastor, he can be somebody who is at the chapter at a regular basis questioning, saying, what are you doing? You know, that sort of thing. And we try to monitor it very closely from the national level.
I think also in respect to that, as alums, we're very concerned about that too. At a recent meeting, we had one of our chapters who was getting a bad reputation. And several alums from that rep said, it's time those guys clean up their act. And if they don't clean up their act, they're out. Mm-hmm. And so there's pressure from all types of levels, whether it be local, the advisors, pastoral advisors, or the executive advisors locally, or at national level and alum level. There's many different levels where they watch to see what goes on at their alum, at their fraternities. And if they don't like something, they have very much a right and, we believe, a responsibility to go to that chapter and say, we think something's wrong, and we think you should correct it, and here's where we how we should do it. And there's very much at the national level we put pressure on chapters both to maintain a scholastic level that we publish at national and in even the fraternity system itself publishes a list of where each fraternity does and the cumulative GPAs. Mm-hmm. And so there's also pressures in that area. So there's quite a few monitoring devices, alums, local pastors, national office, officers as such, who really do keep up with what's going on.
There's a thing in your packet called National Notes, which is basically a monthly newsletter that goes from me to the undergraduates. And the inside of National Notes is a commentary that I write every month. And the issue that you have is in the fall of 1985. It's about a fraternity, unfortunately a Sigma Chi chapter, who made a mistake. And their mistake got big press. And the inside commentary, I made a comment that fraternities live in glass houses. But fortunately, glass is designed to permit viewing in both directions. So if we're going to be in the glass house and make a mistake, everybody's going to see it. But if we're going to live in a glass house and have high standards and high ideals, demonstrate a Christian brotherhood, everybody's also going to see that. And so that is basically the ultimate goal, and that is the commentary that I write monthly tries to bring home that point time after time after time again, and hopefully through repetition they'll bring it. We recognize that problem. That's probably one of our biggest battles. And I am always open to solutions or to questions. In fact, I'm in contact probably with the campus pastors on the campus monthly because sometimes they might see something and say, well, I don't know if I should do anything about it, or maybe I'm just a stick in the mud or whatever. And unless I ask them, I say, you know, hey, is there anything you're uncomfortable with? They probably would not sit down and write that to me in a letter, but they'll talk on the phone.
I'm not familiar with the Greek system, actually, but can you have a house on campus without being in the Greek system? I mean, like, I've been through campuses and seen houses that are more of a fundamental-type Christian organization. What I was thinking about that, I guess that they exist on each campus. I know there was at University of Minnesota, and I see they hang banners that would say Jesus is Lord and Maranatha and stuff like that. Maranatha House, yeah. And I was wondering, does Beta Sigma Psi come under attack because it's a Christian organization from people that are semi-related to that house or whatever, because they feel they're not expressing or not showing the image of being Christian enough?
I would say on occasion we do come under attack. I would delineate between the two organizations legally.
I think that's what I need.
In that, I would, in that they are co-ed organizations, and most of them have co-ed living arrangements. Technically and legally and constitutionally, the only way we can discriminate without of not allowing women into the group is to be a fraternity, because only fraternities and sororities are exempt from Title IX. Now, if we wanted to have a group Lutheran home on campus, you could not legally say no women allowed unless you were a fraternity, a Lutheran fraternity, or a Lutheran sorority. And we believe, and our history is, that we do better in single-sex environments. I am not belittling any other organization that has a co-ed group. I think it would be extremely tough to administer simply because the needs of men and women in group living are much, much different. I think it would be extremely, I couldn't even fathom the necessity from the national level as far as the organization and everything else. And the second thing is I don't, our students, for the most part, are not, I don't know how to say this, they're not pre-STEM majors. Religion is an important aspect of their life, but they're just Joe students. And they're going to do things that you probably wouldn't have done, or that a student in the Maranatha Center probably wouldn't have done, just because they come from that environment. Or maybe they'll do the same thing you do.
I had a question that I guess it kind of ties into your last comment about people being just Joe students. Do your fraternities, do you think, in effect, promote a sort of Lutheranism in the widest possible definition? In other words, sort of a pan-Lutheran, whatever, sort of thing? Is that really the effect of the fraternity, or when these young people are really searching for, hey, which end is up, what's right, what's wrong, so on and so forth? Like now, the LCA and the ALC, the BLC, or whatever you want to call it, the Big Lutheran Church, and where Missouri's at, or where Wisconsin is at, or whatever, and the Reformers, do you see in fraternity houses or whatever, people interested enough to get down to the nitty-gritty between what is this close communion, open communion, what is this female pastors and male pastors, what is unionism versus sort of an exclusivism? Do they get into that? They're not free stems, but they still have to get down to the nitty-gritty rather than operate on a broad I believe in Martin Luther King sort of level, you know.
I think they discuss it. I think they discuss it because it has an impact on their lives. I don't think they understand or care to understand the theology behind it. As a matter of fact, you could call in three pastors and none of them would agree. So in many cases, there's particularly around Reformation Sunday, or there are certain events that are celebrated at the chapter house, Founders Day or whatever, that many pastors or all the local pastors are invited, and a discussion will ensue, a mediated discussion. And I think they're interested in it, and there's a whole lot of nicknames. You know, there's the Missouri Synod, there's the Missouri Synod students and the heathens at our chapter. But we tend to joke about it and to talk about it. On the other hand, we're not a church, and we're not intended to be a church. We enjoy communion, both on the analogy level and on the physical level. However, in many cases, that's not possible. So you know, we don't celebrate the sacraments at the fraternity house, if you will. But it's It's important for the students themselves to discuss that. I think more important is, why am I Lutheran? What is the difference between myself and my girlfriend who's Methodist? And those issues tend to surface more than the differences between the Lutheran synods. Campus ministries, because of time constraints, because of budget constraints, because of personnel constraints, find it very, very difficult to be ecumenical. The fraternity can be ecumenical in that we should understand the other major world religions. We should understand what it is to be Lutheran in the broadest sense, what it is to be Protestant, if you will, what it is Lutherans believe. We try through activities at the national level, at the chapter level, and through the pastors to quote Martin Luther as often as we can. We stress that the students themselves have a call. They have a call to be a student, and they should be the best possible student they can be on the campus. And Martin Luther says, he had a quote that, my call is to form my life accordingly around the forgiveness of sin of God. And so we'll take a quote like that and say, you know, your call and Martin Luther's call and a pastor's call, and try to explain fundamental portions of the Lutheran religion.
Just a note.
I don't know if I'm answering your question there.
Just a note on that. A lot of those questions, if you're a beta sig, does come up. And we promote very much, as far as Delta Chapter, and that's really only one in national, participation from the local pastors. And it's their responsibility to come in and shepherd those students who are LCMS and to answer those questions to those who are ALC or the Big Lutheran Church, whatever that is. And we give them pretty much free rein. If they want to come in and organize, and the students want to organize a Bible study around a certain topic, maybe it is the New Lutheran Church. The Missouri Synod pastor is not prohibited, and it sometimes may be welcomed by the fraternity itself to come in and tell us, Why is the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod not becoming part of it? And he can present that to them, mm-hmm. and answer questions, and in that way give them the answers they may be searching for. Now, an LCA pastor may want to come in and say, well, can I tell them? Yeah, well, then fine, you can come in too. But I think that's where the faith of Lutheran Church Missouri Synod will shine, far outshine any other position by any other synod. And I think that's what makes Beta Sigma Psi unique, is that we encourage participation of pastors in that fraternity. And we encourage pastors to come in, and if they want to start Bible classes, right in the chapter itself. I'm sure they have students who will come, want to come, and do come. And there are some chapters that have Bible studies by Lutheran Church Missouri Synod pastors. So, that's what really makes Beta Sigma Psi unique, and in that we encourage that participation, and most fraternities do not.
Actually, I find that the biggest concern from the students is not the synodical relationship. The most questions that the student asks is, why do we have a certain passage of the Bible on a certain day in the church calendar? Why do we have this order of worship? And so many, many times the pastors explain the Lutheran hymnal. Why do we do this? Why do we have such and such a church service? Why is such and such Sunday called this name? And basically it's a lot of information that could be found through the church, but nobody just really ever told them. They've done this order of worship for as long as they can remember, and they don't really know why. And so most questions on theology or on the churches come out of that area. Yeah.
You commented on being, this should be like the last question. Do you have
Joe's student. And I just wanted to comment that I don't really think that's true. I don't think that the guys there are just Joe's students, because in the first place, you've identified yourselves as being Christian, and you've identified yourselves as being Lutheran. And even if you didn't make that identity as a Christian, you're not just a Joe student that fit in with the rest of the guys, because you stand out. I know I was in the secular fraternity when I was at University of Florida. I was not pre-sem, but I know I stood out like a sore thumb as a Christian and as a Lutheran. I was identified by someone as a Lutheran saying that he could spot a Lutheran a mile off. So you're not just a Joe student.
The cross we bear.
No, it's a good cross. Because it was a positive identification as a Lutheran. He said that he had been a Lutheran at one time, but the people there knew I was a Christian by my life and by the faith I professed, even though I was a pre-vet student at that time. And I think it's the same thing stands up for any Christian.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.